Hi, this is Han Brown, your host of 1M Flourish. I'm reaching out to you today with the goal of reaching 1 million listeners to share advice and to learn from one another on topics of parenting, health, and how to grow your wealth through multifamily investing and senior living investing. We all encounter challenges, setbacks, and disappointments in parenting, health, and personal finance. An enriched life should balance all of these. Here, our guests and listeners, we learn and encourage each other by sharing parenting stories, give tips on leading a healthy lifestyle, and learn how to gain multi-generational wealth through multifamily investing and senior living investing. Let's all reach mutual success and leave behind a legacy for our families. Today, my guest is Nestor Elijio. He's a senior living operator for the past 28 years. He's a successful executive director for various senior living communities, including Sunrise Senior Living, MBK, Silverado, Brookdale Senior Living, and was a senior commissioner for the Pasadena Somerville Senior Living. Nestor has devoted his life in the senior living industry, working in partnership with healthcare, sales, physicians relations, business management, financial, and healthcare management. We're so blessed to have Nestor in this industry with a heart to serve the elderly. Well, hey, Nestor, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
I've always loved to share about the senior living industry, so I'm excited about it as well.
So share with us your journey past 28 years, your story and how you got started in the senior living as an operator.
Yeah, it's a very interesting story for me. I actually started a freshman in high school. And so I was looking for a part-time job. I came from a family where mom was a single mom. So I was the oldest son and I wanted a bicycle to go to school in high school and mom couldn't afford it. So she said, if you can get half of the money and I'll get the other half. And interesting enough, there was a retirement back then in the very early 90s. They used to call them retirement hotels. So there was like a lot of hotels with the name retirement hotel. And so across the street was one and I walked in. And asked if they were hiring, and there was like three other people waiting to be interviewed that day, and they were all high school kids, and I knew a few of them, and they hired most of us. It was interesting. I always tell the story where I was at the right place at the right time. One of the kids was playing the piano for the residents, and they were just loving it. He was a talented kid playing the piano, but it was his turn to go interview. And when he was called, he said something like, I'll be with you in a minute. And because he wanted to finish playing the piano. And I guess the supervisor that was hiring said, wow, he can't even take directions. So she looked at me and she said, are you next? I said, yes. She goes, you know how to wash dishes? I said, yeah, of course. And so she said, you're hired.
Whether or not you believe in luck, there's something to be said for being in the right place and at the right time.
I got the job and he kept playing the piano and then obviously he knew he didn't get the job. So I stayed at that community for about 8-9 years during high school. I just wasn't sure what I wanted to do, right? I was a kid trying to figure out life and really didn't have that grandparents. I didn't have that father figure. So the residents at that time, that generation of residents were like my family. They would encourage me to continue to go to school. They would encourage me to get my education and they would encourage me to move up within the community. So I started as a dishwasher, went in as waiter, then dining room supervisor, then breakfast cook. And then I said, once I got closer to graduating high school, I wanted to be a caregiver and went into that role. Went into that role as a caregiver and then med technician, which was a key part of the element at that time, helping the residents with their medication management. And then just went off from there. Was able just to master a little bit of everything within the community, not feel afraid of it. And again, always had the support of the residents. I think without them, I probably wouldn't be where I'm sitting at today as an executive director and operator. Wow. So that's where I'm at. And the rest is just history. I did the sales and marketing for 10 years and was involved in that and was very successful at it. And then got the opportunity to sit as the operator at a community in Pasadena. And then from there, just that was it. I've been doing now as executive director for a little bit over 7 years now. So it's been good.
The well-being of our parents is our ultimate wish as they age and live out their last years of their lives. In caring for your parents, what I mean is caring for their emotional, mental, and physical well-being. As much as you may appreciate the communities and the services that it comes with, you shouldn't let the presence of a caregiver take your place in the lives of your aging parents.
Absolutely. I think that was a key component of the time, and that's probably the signs of the times now that we're facing challenging times with hiring new staff, and then it's just a revolving door. I think the industry knows that it's a hard thing to find the right person that has that heart and compassion for the elderly. Again, I can tell you when I started in that field and back in the early 90s, there's still a handful of friends that got in that field and are still in the field, and they're still passionate for what they do. And we weren't the best kids in high school, but we kept our noses clean and we were able to just continue based on what our residents were telling us to do and their stories. You know, they lived history, so hearing their stories would make us even more humble at what they went through. At that community I worked at, particularly, it was an all-Jewish community, so I had a lot of Holocaust survivors, so they would share their stories, and so I had to be very humbled by them. So,
what significant changes have you seen in this industry over the years?
Well, two things I have seen that has definitely changed within the decade that I was starting in. One is that I just will go back a little bit as we talked about hiring employees and a team that would come in with a passion. Definitely that's been a challenge, that there's a different generation that's coming in and supporting our residents that needs a lot of validation, but at the same time, growth, right? Everybody wants to grow. And I think at a pace you can grow. And so I'm seeing that as a challenge. I do see there's so many operators in one area that there might be multiple staff members working at multiple places at the same time. So we're all sharing caregivers, which is good, and it could be a challenge as well for our residents. So operators that have key programs for their hiring process are key, benefits and everything else. I think we're all at a common goal with what we give our employees, but there's more than that. Daycare programs for their children, or the ability to be able to bring their children to the community and have intergenerational programs with the residents. I think those are key little elements that make a huge difference to retain employees. I think it's going to be key moving forward. The other thing that I saw in my time that's changed within the last, definitely 28 years, there's a higher acuity for sure. I totally remember going into work at a very young age and hardly seeing wheelchairs and walkers in our communities. It was not something that we would see. Most of our residents were very active. I could tell you as a med technician back in those days, medications that were prescribed to our elderly were very few. There wasn't a lot of medications that we would give that were actually prescribed. A lot of over-the-counter stuff, multivitamins and things like that. But now we're seeing a huge increase on the prescribed medications from the physicians, which is, again, it changes the acuity of the community. There's a higher need in care. Residents coming in with more activities of daily living that definitely is needed in assisted living. So, and I think that's where the word started coming, right? So as I said, when I started, I would hear things like retirement hotel, and then the word assisted living came in place right after. I think it was something that was embraced. So we knew that assisted living was the game changer there. And now that's what we're doing. We're assisting our residents while they're residing with us. So that's what I've seen as far as changes. There's a big demand for dementia communities, memory care neighborhoods. That's something we didn't have in those times. We weren't even aware if those behaviors were normal or what they were. But now with all the education and dementia and Alzheimer's, I think we're a little bit more ahead of the game on how to provide care for someone that's going through that challenge in life. So,
from my personal experience with my mom who has dementia, you really need to look at your loved one's needs and then assess all the possible solutions to get them the help that they need. You got to look at what's their ability to perform daily living activities, such as self-feeding, moving while performing activities, such as getting in and out of bed, in and out of a chair, dressing, bathing, showering, personal hygiene, and so forth. What forward feedback do you want to share with developers and designers in constructing new senior living?
And I think it really depends on the area, what they're developing. Obviously, rural areas, there's a lot of space, a lot of common space to be shared. Inner city or citywide programs or communities that are being developed three floors and up. They're limited in space, so they're building common areas within the community. I think one of the key things, and we're seeing it now, I've been seeing this in the last 5-6 years. I ran communities in Arizona, and I ran communities here in California, and I'm seeing a bigger family involvement. I'm seeing grandkids involved. I see more younger generation coming, visiting their grandparents. I think that's so neat, seeing that. And so that's our audience. Not only is it our new potential administrators, operators, developers, there's got to be something we can build in communities where a computer lab for the kids to come in, or a game area where the grandkids can play, a play area for toddlers all the way up to 6-7 year olds, while granddad and their parents are watching them play. I mean, something like that. You go to the mall for that stuff. I have 2 twins, 5-year-olds, and our escape from my wife and I is like, let's go to the mall, let's go shopping, and then we'll take the kids to play in the playground. And you see grandparents sitting there with their kids. So those are little things that I think are important. Family space is great. Most of the beautiful communities that open up that are 5 stars will have these beautiful, luscious lounges, and you won't see them being used a lot, occasionally for an event or something like that. But I think we got to go back to our beginnings, where it's a family, it should be a family oriented community. So, and breaking the myth, right? I think my kids, I have 2 different generation of children in my life, my 5-year-old twins and my 24 and 22-year-old son, they saw 2 different things. And I think they would appreciate that kind of play centers and things that are inviting for them as well. I think that's our crowd as well.
What's a typical day for you as an operator?
So a typical day for me as an operator, there's a non-typical day. It's so different. But I could tell you, at most of the organizations I've worked at, there's a routine stand-up where we meet with the managers of the team of the day and discuss what the day is going to look like, how it went last night, talk about new residents that have just moved in to see how their night went, if there was any adjustments that we needed to do, or if they're adjusting well, what was the feedback? So that's sort of our game plan at the beginning. We all huddle up, and that's what it is. It says stand up. Most companies do embrace that, and it's a stand up. We all stand for 15, 20 minutes and discuss how the game plan is going to work for the day, who's having challenges, which departments are needing more support, and then sort of that leads to what the day is going to look like, either marketing events, family concerns, employee concerns, and then corporate meetings, which are necessary so we know exactly what's happening at the corporate level. And then making sure that we make time to spend with our residents. So we can't just have meetings all day and then totally forget about the residents. So I make it a schedule for my manager's team at any community that we all take an assignment in the dining room, either passing coffee or supporting the kitchen. So that's really ground zero for us, is being in the dining room, because we hear it all. Hey, our residents will tell us firsthand, I notice Ms. Jones is not feeling good this morning. And so that's key for us. Or they'll say, hey, last night's event was a success. It was an amazing happy hour and we enjoyed it. Can you bring that entertainer back? So that's the best place to be. So we make sure we assign our managers for that. I also have something we call once a month, where each manager picks an activity of choice that they feel comfortable of doing with the residents. So for me, I love doing food shows. So I'll do like a food show for our residents and do my favorite dish with them. And they get to see me do it from scratch to the beginning. And so it's pretty cool. I've had maintenance directors that'll do a wood shop with them or break down a carburetor. And then you have like 6-7 gentlemen around fixing a carburetor, which is pretty neat. And then you have the ladies doing either painting classes, and why not offer wine too? I mean, it has to be a cool environment. So we've seen that with my managers. So that's what the day looks like. Then the unexpected days, right? Where state walks in, or there's an actual complaint, or there's an elopement where residents attempted to leave the community. Those are days that we don't predict. And so it could change obviously every day. But for the most part, there's always good days.
Within the states that you worked in, share with us some government and medical regulations that a senior living must comply.
Yeah, so for us in California, I can talk a little bit about Arizona as well, but I think overall is the process of admission, ensuring that we're caring for the resident that requires the right care. And I'm talking about the difference between skilled nursing or rehabilitation versus assisted living or a memory care neighborhood. So if we define those, then we can actually do a better assessment of the resident moving into our community. So the state, if we get into situations where we are bringing someone that requires 24-hour nurses on staff, injections and IV treatments, then we're probably not the best place. So we need to make sure we're following regulations to what allows us to care for at our communities. And secondly, I think they audit everything from employee fingerprints, training. There's a requirement of training for our care staff that's done yearly. And part of it in California requires dementia training as well. So that's key. Training is good. The possibilities of how to train someone are endless. You can do a computer training, or you can do a classroom setting, or you can do a one-on-one training. It is good to see. And a lot of companies have different approaches, but for the most part, it is a requirement here in California. And they'll audit everything from medication carts. Recently in California, we had to do the evac chairs, which is the evacuation chairs for the recent fires we've had, that we can get residents that are non-ambulatory out of the community faster. So those are requirements that every community in California should be up to standard now. And so there's always regulations changing, and some states are different than others. Some states combine it with the Department of Health Services. Here in California, it's community care licensing, Arizona as well. And so we have our manuals. We follow Title 22 here, and every state's got different regulations, Article 8 in Arizona. And so there's specific things there. But here's the key thing: when following state-specific guidelines, is working well with the license for us is the LPA and the state. So having a good open communication relationship. I think for me, what's made my success is any community I arrive to or I become part of, I make a courtesy call to the director of licensing or the LPA and introduce myself, because they're my advisors as well. There might be a challenging situation in our community, and they're the ones that might be able to give me a little bit more information on what to do versus me trying to figure it out, making a mistake, and then paying the consequence. So I always recommend, every time I mentor someone that's going to become an ED or someone that has been in the industry and asked me, I say, have you called your state representative or your licensing agent and talk to them? So it should not be anything that anyone should be afraid. It should be a good mutual respect relationship, because if we're both out for the same thing, and it's taking care of the elderly population.
So how do families gain trust in you and your team to place their loved ones under your care?
Yeah, I think it's very important that we understand that anyone walking into the community obviously is seeking help. I used to have a vice president of sales and marketing that always say, people just don't go on the weekends or during the week senior living shopping. It's not just something that people do for the future. It is always something that's going on at home. And so we need to have some empathy, obviously, when they're coming in, understanding what the situation is, what benefits we can offer in our community that would resolve those concerns. And so for me and my team, every team that I work with, I always tell them, we have to hear their story first. We have to know, we have to put ourselves in their shoes. And so the way I love to win trust, and this is a perfect example. I had a wonderful tour last night at my property at the community I'm at. And it was 5:30 in the afternoon, and they wanted a tour. And if I'm here or whoever's here, we're going to give them a tour. We took a long time just discussing and about the needs of their loved one. And I made them feel comfortable. I understood. I shared stories of similar situations. I shared some of the benefits that we had available. And all along, I kept asking, how many communities have you seen? And they would say five. And I was like, oh my God, you must be very confused by now, because five or six communities is just a lot. It's a lot of information that you're being thrown at. And every community, although we might have the same thing that we offer, which is assisted living, we are all different. We all have something key element that might be good for your loved one. I'm not quick to ask for a deposit. You can tell if we're building that trust, that the deposit will come immediately, or they want to hold the room or the reservation. So 2.5 hours in the conversation, we had built a great relationship. I'm a Rotarian. The son of this person that was looking at our community was a Rotarian. So we combined some of our interests as well. I talked a little bit about my background and how I've gone through personally in my life with a loved one that had to be in assisted living, and was able to win their trust. We are scheduled to do an assessment in the next couple of weeks. And if we're a good fit for their loved one, they'll be joining our family here.
What questions should family ask when they are researching for senior living for their loved ones?
Yeah, I think I always start off by, when I hear a family member say, this is going to sound like not an appropriate question to ask, but I need to know. And I always say there isn't a question that you can't ask. If you feel that you can't ask this question, then there's probably something that we're missing. So we need every piece of information you give us so we can all make the right decision. I had a son, community in Arizona, that had asked me a question about pets. And he said, do you accept a cat? And I said, yes, we're a pet-friendly community, and that's not an issue. And then he said, well, do you accept 10 cats? Because his father wanted all his cats. And so I said, well, let's talk about it. And so that was key. I didn't say no. I said, let's talk about it. Tell me a little bit more about these cats. Tell me a little bit more about why dad needs all 10 of them. And tell me what's his favorite. And then we came down through, there was 2 cats that dad really took care of and that he couldn't live without. So it that's, again, a piece of the conversation that we have to have. Asking questions, reviewing estate websites for any deficiencies. I'm going to be the first to admit, and I think hopefully colleagues out there will understand, we're not perfect. There might be deficiencies in a community you walk into that are repetitive. And so as an executive director, if I'm new and I see those repetitive violations, that's probably the first thing I'm going to be looking at to see if it's a medication error that's consistently happening every 3 months. Then there's got to be some training opportunities. Is it something that we need to fix? So looking at the state, inspections are important. I believe most states do post them. They're public information. The state of California does post them. It's key. And then going with an open mind and discussing those things as you are visiting the communities and saying, can you tell me a little bit about this incident? Is this something that was fixed? Was this something that was taken care of? And then also looking at the ones that are great. I've also have great communities where we do zero deficiencies and it's 100%. And as an administrator, we're thankful for that. But we also know we have things to improve, right? We're running day by day operations. So we see, hey, we can fix this a little bit better because we could have got dinged for this, but we didn't. And so making sure that we also celebrate the moments we don't. There's questions on staff ratio. What is your staff ratio? Every company has different ways of explaining that. I think the higher the acuity, the higher the need, the more staff. The lesser the acuity, the lesser the need. Obviously, less staff. I think it's just very simple. And then talking about the meals and the programs and all that is key. So bring as many questions and making sure that it's not a standard question or a standard answer, I should say. If it sounds too standard, then everybody's heard the same answer and they're really not listening at that point.
What do you see as far as the evolution of changes in the residences coming in as independent care and then later moving to dementia care?
I think you said you shared a little bit about your story about your siblings and you guys are all asking questions. I think we're seeing a lot of interaction with a lot of different families and everybody has different opinions of how to take care of mom, how to take care of dad. I think that's a battle within itself, within the families. Personally, myself as well, I had to deal with that with my mom as we found a location for her as well. So my sister, my brother, we all had different ideas of what was best for her. But I'm the expert. I've been doing it for 28 years. But I'll tell you, when you do it for your own loved one, it's also hard. And I might not be the expert. So I have to humble myself again on situations like that. The evolution that I'm seeing is it's great to see communities that are being built that are like similar to CCRCs, the continuum of care where they can offer all those options. the independent living. And then as they start aging in place, they can move into assisted living. And then if the progression of the disease is getting more severe, then you have the option of the dementia neighborhood or the unit. So those are key components. In a saturated market, when you have multiple competitors within an area, I think it becomes more of who's providing customer service, who's providing the best customer service, because I can go down the street and pay the same amount and probably receive better customer service than at a location where they don't even know my mom by name, something like that. So there's a different evolution of people being able to look at Yelp and being able to look at Google and looking at those kind of things as well to determine if they would go to the next place. I've had interesting families that have come to my communities and said, well, this will be the third community I moved to. And I think that's a red flag. You want to ask what's happened to the last two, or what did they do that didn't meet your needs, to make sure that you don't go through the fourth or the third community. And so we all want census. We all want to have 100% occupancy. That is, I think, ultimately everybody's goal in business, on the business side of it. But also, is it a red flag? Are the customers looking at discounts, or is there something that the competitor is giving that it's financially more suitable for them? That's really the evolution that's going on now. Now, what is the market? How much is the market going to be able to hold?
When going through it with my mom, we looked at location. Location was key for many elders. You know, some will want to be near family, near doctors, and near hospital. And some might want to be at a central location near shopping or entertainment. And some might be want to be near their children or grandchildren. And then also, with regard to living space, some may want an extra bedroom for a guest. And some might want a kitchenette or a patio for entertaining. You have to consider all the amenities and the activities that your loved ones can have fun with, such as a pool, movie theater, art studio, a cafe, salons, or bars. And then once you tour the community, you want to see the contract and look at the in detail the fees, the rules, and the regulations, and know, for instance, how the services are billed, whether or not you can see your current physician, and can you come and go as you please, or can your loved ones come and go as they please? And what are the visiting hours? And what training or background checks are required for the staff? And are there registered nurse or medical professional available at all times or within a window of time? And of course, find out if the senior living facility participate in Medicare, Medicaid, or long-term care insurance, and so forth. And if you require a higher level of care in the future, would that be available at this community? And if you have a long-term stay at a hospital or a rehabilitation facility, would they hold your spot? So there's many considerations. Really have to review it carefully and ask these questions during your visit.
Yeah, and I think that goes back into leading into asking those critical questions, because you'll still end up going to meet the team, to meet the people. And I think at the end of the day, it's not the structure that we're looking at. It might be beautiful, gorgeous community, but it's really who is in there, who is taking care of them, the interactions they hear, the laughing, the ambiance can tell you multiple times. And I'm sure a lot of executive directors and operators will agree when they hear someone leaving and said, I don't know about your community, but I have that feeling that I don't know what I felt, but it's a feeling that everybody cares. And when you hear things like that, you're like, wow, it's the synergy that we're giving so people can feel comfortable coming to our community. And again, there's different operators running different, their communities. Some communities, if an operator is having a bad day or something's going on within the community, changes in management, you can feel it. You can feel this team either feeling down or not feeling 100%. So that those energy moments, residents feel them. Our residents start feeling like, okay, something's going on, administrator's gone, or this person's gone. And so they start feeling a little bit like, now I'm nervous. It's their home and things are changing. And so those are going to be what makes differentiate a lot of us.
What do you see as a synergy between the loved ones? Are they getting out of their rooms to engage with the staff, and are the families coming to see them? Over the past 28 years, what trends do you see?
Yeah, in my early years, I would hardly see family, to be honest. When I was working as a caregiver, I wouldn't see a lot of families visiting. And I'm talking in mid-90s. And here's the other reason why. Most of my residents were still very active enough to get in their car and drive and visit their children. So we're seeing a different, again, there's just a different, more higher acuity that's being needed now in our community. So the interactions now, I do see a lot of families visiting, grandchildren, kids from college visiting their grandparents, a lot of intergenerational families, great grandkids visiting from college. So it's neat to see those things, because at a previous community, that was the moment that the resident wanted to introduce us to everyone, right? So the grandkid was in town and they're like, you got to meet my granddaughter, Nestor. She just graduated from the university of so-and-so, and she's thinking of going in geriatric care, and can she spend some time with you? And you tell her, and I'm like, oh my God, I would love to. So they showcasing their family to us. And then I would turn around and say, how do you like your grandparents' home? And they were like, wow, it's great. It has a pool, has a walking area. The dining is awesome. I mean, I can imagine having this at the college dorm. So it's good to see those interactions. You're absolutely right. There's always probably a daughter that's more involved in the process of their loved one living in the community. So there's a lot of connection with it. I don't know how many families I'm still connected with to this date that I no longer at the community, but they can reach out to me if they have a question, or if they have a concern, or if they have just an update for me and say, hey, guess what? Mom is here now. And it's neat to see that and to build that sort of relationship with them as well.
Yes, my siblings come and see my mom daily. There's total 10 of us, but 6 of us are near my mom. So we do take turn to visit her, make sure that she's fed, bathe, and spend hours with her on a daily basis. We stay and we appreciate the time that we have with her, but often we do leave crying because, you know, you can see the deterioration of their mind.
And I see that a lot. There's definitely daily family visits. There's definitely a daughter visiting or a son in the afternoon after work visiting. I see that a lot. And the other key thing is that we're also interacting with them. How are you doing? How are you feeling? We tend to forget that we're only caring for our resident, but in reality, we're caring for the whole family. So I don't know how many times I've taken out a son out, and when I can see in his face, his mom can't recognize him anymore, and he's just having a hard time. And I'll be like, hey, what are you doing after? When you're finished here, let's go have dinner. Let's go talk. And I've done that a couple of times, and it benefits me because I can share my story of what's going on with my mom, and then we sort of share stories. And we have to be able to also lift the children up and the grandkids and everybody. We have to be able to do that and not imagine that, it's only the resident, but it's the whole resident and the resident's family that we're taking care of.
What standards do you hold when hiring your staff?
So one particular community, we allow them before to be interviewed by group interview, which would be the managers. So we would do group interviews together, ask key question and components about caregiving and burnout or the reason of joining this industry, tap into the purpose of what they're here for. I've had candidates just tell me, I just need a paycheck. When people tell me that, I normally tend to say, well, you know, there's other options, but not here. You have to have some compassion and some willingness. I've heard people in the industry say, well, I'm only going to hire people that have done this field for 3 years. Well, I tell them good luck, because you're not going to find them. They're either still working at their communities. So we have to give people an opportunity to get in our field, and we got to educate them. So I'm a big proponent in going to the universities and going to colleges and high schools at the early stages and talking to kids that are going in the workforce about all the opportunities that they're in a community, from dietary to housekeeping to front desk to driver to activities director. There's so many different opportunities. And so making it more of a, oh, that's pretty interesting career versus it's a job. So we do group interviews. We also allow them when we do feel, hey, this particular candidate said some key things that are based on our core values or principles of service or belief of what our mission is in the company. We allow them to come maybe for an hour or 2 hours to observe our care staff or to observe the dietary or to observe depending on the department so they can actually see how it actually functions. I can tell you that it's better to do that than get them started, go through the process of fingerprint, physical, TB tests, and then they're onboarding and then them exiting quicker back into the field because they don't think they can handle it. It's better to just show them this is what we do on a daily basis. There's wonderful days and then there's days that we really need to all put together and work as a team. And so that makes the difference when we're doing that.
Is there a need for more senior living? And if yes, what do you like to see incorporated?
Yeah, I've always said that even in my days as sales and marketing, I would always say there's not enough places. Although in city areas, you see, across the street, there's another assisted living. And I hate using the word competitors because we can all work in union. We can probably fill our communities a little bit better. But there's definitely a big need. There's definitely a need more for dementia neighborhoods and memory care. I think in the late 90s and early 2000s, developers started seeing that need and started developing the wings, the units or the neighborhoods, 20 beds, 30 beds. Some communities took it further and made the whole entire community a early stage to later stage dementia. And so they did the delayed egress system. So, and now we discovered that dementia is an umbrella of different things that are going on. And this is it's just not Alzheimer's or Lewy body or Parkinson's. You have TBIs, traumatic brain injuries. You have other things that are going on, depression. So there's a huge need for those memory care neighborhoods for sure. I would love to see incorporated is the different generation that's coming in. So we talk about the baby boomer generation. Before I was an executive director, I would hear my directors tell me, well, the baby boomer generation is around the corner. Well, that was like 10 years ago. I kept hearing that. Listen, that generation will come in, but it's the bingo is not going to keep them here. Sing-alongs is not going to be the key thing for them. The dining might need to be different. I know of a developer that created something out of state that I was totally in. I was like, that's so cool. He created a microbrewery with a bar style at his community. And he looked at found the locals that brewers in the area. And so he invited a lot of the residents to participate in this. And I think 90% of his residents that moved in at the community were all because they were locals. They loved having a glass of beer or a glass of wine. And so creating that environment, there's a lot of operators that are doing a little more modernization of it. Pizza brick ovens in the middle of the dining room where you can have that fragrance of a restaurant. Those are key. Those are going to bring a different type of resident in the community that might be a little more active, but that's looking at the future in case they need assisted care. So that's the way we're going. Independent living looks like independent living is going to be independent living. I see operators separating themselves from AL or memory care and focusing on more of a hospitality hotel type setting. And that's key too. There's people that are going to be looking for that kind of environment. Instead of the bingo night, it's going to be comedy night at the Brea Improv or having comedians coming in or talk on different topics versus healthcare. It might be more of we're going to talk about the JPL. I've had JPL come to a few of my communities and talk about things that they're doing in outer space. So more fun, more creative marketing is going to be key.
Hey, I really, really enjoy our conversation, Nestor. I see that a key component to be successful in this profession, you must have a heart to serve the seniors and their families. And I see why you're very good at what you do. Congrats to you.
I appreciate that. I appreciate it. And I thank you for allowing me to speak and sharing a little bit about my passion and shedding light on it as well to developers. I think there's some great developers out there. There's some great operators. I think it's there's some great associations out there in the East Coast and here in Southern California and the West area. So coming together, I think, is just good. So thank you.
And thank you so much, Nestor. I look forward to having you back again and look forward to meeting up with you in California. Take care. Thank you for listening to 1M Flourish Podcast. Be sure to visit 1mflourish.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover our fantastic content. If you love this episode of 1M Flourish Podcast, please head over to iTunes to subscribe, rate, and leave a review. It is much appreciated. Thank you. Let's create multi-generational wealth and leave a legacy for our families.